You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. David, let's start with, before we get to the nitty-gritty, let's start with what you read over the weekend for a change. Economist and then the Financial Times and also the more, how should we say, right-leaning publications.
In fact, you know, it was Independence Day weekend, so there wasn't much really on the news front. I'm still trying to undo the OBB. What's it? The one big beautiful budget.
The bill. Yes. Oh,
yeah. And I think it's being explored. There's nothing but there's so many different opinions. It's like press one for a positive opinion, press two for a negative opinion. Everybody's got their own views. Yes. I think the only thing that I'm focusing on at the moment is that, okay, markets are holding. Ignore everything else. A lot of political news. Not that it's going to add very much. But what I'm focusing on is, okay, well, let's see where we're going the second half. And that to me is a little more important. And what I think is going to happen, of course, and I don't think I'm saying anything new, is that, you know, with oil coming down and you've seen the oil price coming down now, I think that Powell, he won't be pressurized, but I think they will start to reduce rates. Whether we get one in July now, I'm not sure. It's not probably not going to happen, but probably another two, maybe three in the second half of the year as inflation starts to come down. And I think that's just going to give markets a different perspective. That's why I'm a bit negative on gold. And I'm a bit negative on platinum, on precious metals. Negative meaning not expecting a massive collapse, but I think we've probably seen the best in both of those metals. But I think it's going to be okay for markets. I'm certainly not going away from where we were in AI. I think it's beyond our ability to actually grasp what's happening, the speed at which it's happening, and the companies that are emerging. So I think it's going to be a fairly decent
Well, you would say that, wouldn't you? But the only thing I will say, David, is the erratic nature of the leadership and the squabbling in between countries that used to, and blocs that used to be allies. There's always that hanging over the markets a little bit. And I think that the exuberance of the first half of the year won't be repeated in the second half. I mean, I don't think, as you say, there'll be a collapse, but I don't know how many more percent you're going to get out of the S&P, for example, in the second half of 2025.
I'll agree with you there. I agree. What I'm saying is I don't think it's going to fall over, and I don't think we'll have the volatility that we had with the Liberation Day or Obliteration Day, whatever you want to say. You know, that complete collapse in the – I think we'll kind of bumble through. My big issue is, I forgot to mention, I was reading all about Musk, of course, and his new party. And I don't know where this is going.
Yeah, that'll do well.
I just ignore it now. I just, you know, move on. And I think, you know, it's going to broaden. We're going to have to look a lot more carefully about where we go. But the one thing that I can't find, and is that, okay, you know, outside of AI, outside of technology, there's not a lot of choice at the moment until we see rates coming down, confidence gaining, and people starting to spend or do things. That seems to be a little far away. So I'm not rushing in to say, oh, rates are going to come down, therefore go and buy consumer goods or go and buy banks and so on. You know, I'm holding back on that and still sticking with where I am, which is mainly, you know, exposed to technology. So I'm not going to rush in and increase portfolios or increase the extent of holdings. But I think that the mood will start to improve.
David, do you ever look at really big super macro themes? Do you ever look at that when selecting? Because I've received, and you will receive as well, because I'm going to send it to you, a very thoughtful piece by a chap called Sahil Mattani, who is at the Investment Institute at 91 in London. Okay, and now he's written it and published it on the 4th of July. It says the unstoppable dollar meets the immovable Mr. Trump. It's all about the dollar. Now, one of the things I say when I talk about currencies is I always emphasize the fact that from the moment I sat down at a desk, it was drummed into me that when a currency, a major currency, starts on a trend, it goes on that trend. It keeps on going for a long time. It's not, it's up and down, but the major movement is either up or down, not just for weeks or months. It's for years. I mean, you've seen the Rand, for example, a weakening currency. It has been for goodness knows that's how long. I mean, 2-3 decades. But he's talking about the dollar. And he says the following. Dollar cycles are longer than others because four self-reinforcing forces create inertia. They rarely reverse unless all four turn at once. Trump-era policies, fiscal strain, and shifting global capital could trigger such a convergence. He's saying that perhaps we are now on the verge of a dollar bear market. Do you look at that? I mean, you're talking about the gold price, for example, coming under pressure. If this article turns out to be true, that's not going to be so. We're going to see 5,000 gold.
I can't buy that. You know what I mean? He might be 100% right. I can't buy it because I'm saying, why would you want to buy the euro? Why do you want to buy the British pound? Why do you want to buy China? Why do you want to buy those? You know what I'm saying? Is that where you want to invest? The more I unravel the markets and the more I look at businesses, the more I tend to kind of go back to the U.S. You know, if you look at United States, if you look at their companies versus other companies, I'm talking about corporates and that, you still want to be where the U.S. is. You know, you don't – I have no inclination to go into other companies. Yes, give or take an exception. You know, there are a few businesses that are doing very well. So I still think that U.S. companies are far stronger, okay?
So you think U.S. companies being strong means that money comes in to buy those U.S. companies on U.S. stock exchanges and therefore that supports the dollar. Is that what you're saying?
I'm trying to say, when I say that, but I don't understand the other markets. And the other markets are the bond markets and the currency markets, you know, and maybe what I'm saying, the equity market is overwhelmed by those markets. So the equity markets might continue to do well, but I can't understand those movements. You know what I mean? I'm not a bond person. I don't know the size of the bond markets and the size of the currency markets, which are associated with the bonds versus the equity market. That's where I've got a missing, you know, that's where the blank is with me. But if it comes to equities, I'm still going US. And is that sufficient to sway money back into bonds? You know, I think you need a bond market as well in order to alleviate the pressure on the dollar.
So what you've just reinforced that the way you look at investments is you start with the companies, you like the companies, you like the stability, you like the dividends, whatever it is, and you say, right, that's it. And then afterwards, you're reading articles and you're saying, well, the dollar might weaken for 5 years. How does that affect me? Maybe. But the first thing on your investment criteria for a portfolio construction is the companies themselves rather than anything outside like macroeconomics.
Yes. Well, as long as America's stable, you know, as long as it's not, that doesn't mean I'm going into some kind of African jungle or something like that. No, you know. So I've got to assure myself that there's nothing that worries me about America. I mean, to a point where I'm not going to go in. But I still think that's where I'm having the difficulty, you know. That's where I have great difficulty is that I don't understand those markets well enough, the bond markets. And there might be a huge amount of money, you know, that where investors prefer to go into Europe or prefer to go into the UK rather than the US. I don't think so. Even so, you know, I far prefer to be in the US and probably would stick with them simply because of the you know what the U.S. represents? I don't think there's any other capitalist country that can match the United States. You know, I don't think Europe is a socialist country. I don't know where the U.K. is going. I don't know what else remains, the Middle East, China, Russia. None of those excite me. And I'm saying, hold on. At the moment, That's my still my safe haven.
Okay. I think what I was trying to get at with this article, let's say that this chap is right, and let's say that, that we have gone into a long-term structural bear market in the US dollar. I think if it's true, people will be sitting down. Cleverer people than me, not than you, but they'll be saying, right, emerging markets and developed markets, what does it mean for their various asset classes? And they'll look at bonds and they'll look at currencies and they'll look at equities and everything else and say, okay, how do we play this over the next few years? There's where do we position ourselves? You've made your point very clear, US equities.
Yeah, yeah. I would, that's where I'd go, you know, and I still think that, that if there is going to be anybody that leads us out of this indifferent global growth, it's going to be the US, you know, it's, and I'm surprised. I mean, honestly, Lindsay, when I look back on the last few months, I just say, thank God, you know, thank God, because
It was looking precarious at one stage, wasn't it?
You got no idea.
Early April, even, people were. I can say the word. People were shitting themselves.
Totally. Mm. No, and you can include me in that group because I had no idea how we were going to get out, you know, and what destruction he would have, and yet here we are. No one cares anymore.
No.
You know. No one cares. He goes on and they say, oh, there he goes again. You know, tariffs here, tariffs there. And markets are holding steady. Even now, you know, the US will open shortly. And, you know, it might be slightly down because they missed out on Friday and there's been a few developments. But people are getting on with it. And I think what they are starting to do is just discount that rates are going to come down and hopefully sentiment will start to pick up again. It's not a, I think from an academic point of view, and that's where I can, your man from 91, I can understand what he's writing. You know, once you start to get into that side of it, the intellectual side where you've got these models and you're modeling, yeah, I can understand where they come to the conclusion. My instincts are, you're not going to convince me. You know, you're not going to sway my view. Simply based, and I come back to the source of my views, and that comes back to looking at the underlying businesses, looking at why people want to go to the why they want to go to the US, why do they want to list in the US, why does AstraZeneca want to come and go and list in the United States and go away from UK? I can understand that's. You know, that's a story. Well, there's a pulse and a momentum.
Have a look at this, though. One of the reasons that the gold price is doing well is because the dollar has been under enormous pressure. I mean, it's been to something like 118 against the euro. In other words, so 1 euro used to buy a couple of days ago, 1.18 US dollars. And it was close to par before. In other words, both of those currencies being equal. And as the dollar weakens, then the value of a dollar asset has to go up in order to retain its value. Now, that's good for your shares because you're trading shares that are denominated in dollars. So that's a simple argument for you as well as your analysis of the company itself.
Yes, dead right. So, but I think, you know, that's why I always challenge people who say to me, you know, we've got to go into Europe, or where they make these geographical shifts. I say, okay, give me 5 good companies that can match anything in the United States. And I can't find that.
We can find 2, obviously, ASML and...
They remain sure.
Yeah. Who's the other one? And what's the other one?
There's quite a few in your area of the woods. You know, there's some really good businesses. I think that's Mini USA. The Netherlands. I think it's it's a good place to be. I think you've chosen the right area.
Yes.
And there's ASM, there's BESI. There are quite a few businesses. If you want to go into, look, there are companies like Airbus, which stand out. Safran, which is very much associated to Airbus. You've got the luxury businesses, whether it's, Ferrari, Hermes, LVMH. I don't know, LVMH is starting to worry me a bit. You've got beauty companies like L'Oreal, but they're all international and they've got their place. Should we start to see confidence pick up and people start to spend again? you know, and those are on my list. You know, the one area that I can't get on top of and it's driving me mad is the pharmaceutical side. And there's some, you know, great companies, not only in the UK, there's GSK, there's AstraZeneca, and then you've got all Swiss companies. But it's an area that just doesn't give you any return simply because of the huge amount of government interference. You've got regulation, you've got middlemen, all kinds of people. And although those are great businesses, I can't be convinced. I've taken not a knock. I've just been very disappointed in many of them.
Are you worried about the weight loss drugs suddenly coming under pressure because of either side effects or competition or something like that? Because the ones that were the forerunners have suddenly hit a brick wall, haven't they? And that's being polite.
Yeah. They haven't lived up to where we thought they would and the promise of the drugs. Lindsay, there was an article here. I don't know whether I brought it up with you last week. There are five-year-olds here who are displaying the symptoms of middle-aged people in terms of obesity in South Africa, simply because of what they fed on, you know, and you start to see what kind of a problem it is and the off, you know, the effects that it does have on a person, you know, youngsters. And you understand the need for these drugs to be spread widely. Simply, I don't think the after effects are as bad as maybe they, you know, these are big drug companies who would have done their tests. It might have an effect after a long term. But I think the short-term effects, or I think one of the more permanent effects of losing, gives you a whole lease on life, you know, a whole new feeling of confidence about yourself. You don't have the health issues and so on. But the interference in between, you know, between Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk making the drugs to the actual person who uses them in between is an absolute swamp, and you know which just prevents these drugs being issued. And there's all kinds of accusations against everybody, and that's what we're suffering at the moment. I think, I suppose the best ones in them are probably the robotic surgery and some of those devices, you know, which are much more technical. But even then, there's still pricing issues and along the way. But let's see, I don't know. I come back to to the same view that, listen, for the meantime, I'm the one thing about our market is that if you don't like something, you can sell it, you know, straight away. You hit a button, you're out. So if we're wrong, we can correct that very, very quickly. So for the meantime, I do this every day. I go through the European markets. I go through all the markets. And I say, is there anything there that, you know, that we should be doing? And I just shrug my shoulders.
And nothing has changed so far, apart from a bit of a worry about pharmaceuticals and also luxury goods.
Still great companies.
Okay. Yeah. All right, then. We've got Trump now changing again. I saw, what's his name? Besant. I saw Besant talking. And he's saying, we're sending out letters to the smaller countries today, and most of those will stay at 10%. And then, of course, they're focusing on the 18, 19 countries that really do business with the United States, and they're getting a letter. And they call it a take, or the CNN calls it a take it or leave it letter. In other words, you either sign this deal, this tariff trade, or you come up with a negotiation that we consider worthy of talking to you about.
Yeah.
Or it's Trump. And it's August the 1st. And again, that annoys me. It was July the 9th, wasn't it, originally? That was the 90 days.
Now they're giving you to August the 1st before it's implemented. So you've got that breathing period, which you could come back. Yeah. It just goes on. I don't even know what it all means and what it's going to mean for the great big, you know, for America in terms of actually attracting, you know, getting the receipts of all those tariffs. I don't know what it means. I don't think anybody knows what it means, but the market's just kind of grinding on, virtually ignoring it. And then he goes out, the one that, you know, they're all, BRICS is meeting now in Brazil, and the first thing they do is have a vote for a motion to condemn US and Israel for attacking Iran. You know, and I just see there Cyril Ramaphosa, and I say, just don't you read your memos? You know, why don't you just be quiet there? Why don't they just get on with business? Because all that it does is make it more difficult now for us to deal with America. You know, I'm at a loss. You know, I say, stop. You're not going to break down capitalism. You're not going to destroy American capitalism. Get used to that. No matter what you do, no matter who you side with, you know, just.
Yes, BRICS have already annoyed Trump. I mean, BRICS starting their meeting today in South America, and they've said anti-American things, according to Trump. You don't, as you quite rightly say, you don't do that, especially with that loony in the White House. He's looking strange as well. Have you noticed he's putting on weight, David?
He is putting on weight because he's walking very uncomfortably.
Isn't he walking strangely? I mean, I think the lifts in his shoes, because of his extra, he has lifts in his shoes. Pushing him forward, they always do.
That's right.
And his weight means that he walks funny, and his trousers are shorter as well. I don't know if you noticed that. Yeah. They seem to be going higher and higher, and his belt is getting higher also. It's very strange.
He doesn't look well at all. When he walks, he doesn't. He's kind of lumbering along there.
Mm.
And I don't know whether he's, you know, he's got a lot of energy. I can't take that away from him.
Yes.
But when he does walk, he's not walking. It's not a fluent motion, not at all. And he does. You're saying about the weight, he does look a lot bigger.
Yes.
Maybe it's a suit that he wears. You know that.
No, it's not the suits. You know, suits are trying to make him look slimmer for some extraordinary reason. No, that's what he thinks. It does exactly the opposite.
That is awful.
I saw an article the other day which said a cynical article. It was saying that his suits look like the material of the tents that US aid used to send to third world countries. So he's got lots of material to go for. Something like that, it said. He's nearly an octogenarian. He's got to be careful because he could drop dead.
Well, he is in his 80th year, sure.
Mm.
That's it. But he does look very uncomfortable. Yeah. Look, he carries on. I mean, the kind of pace that he keeps for a man his age, credit to him.
Yes, yes, that's quite right.
Anyway, but, you know, he can just fall over one day. And then you've got Vance. He's only in his 40s.
terrifying. David, thank you for all that. So there's nothing really on the JSE today that I'm looking at. Nothing whatsoever. The rand is weaker because the dollar is stronger. It's in the 1770s. What is it, in the 1750s last time we spoke? But none of the big trends have stopped. A little bit of a pause in the S&P, only down a quarter of a percent ahead of the US opening. And that's it, really. Football to look forward to? I don't know, really. I don't know if I'm looking forward to it yet.
I don't know. I haven't got into it. I must be honest. I'm still out of it. I can't get excited. As we were saying before we came on, this World Cup or the World Club football, I have zero interest. I don't even know who's playing. Mm. I don't know where they are, what the result is, and what it all means. For me, it just seems to be a money-making racket that was put into the United States. I don't even know if they're drawing crowds in. I'm not sure.
Some games are. Yes, because of the expat community in the United States, like Juventus, for example, the Italian community will flock and see that, and the Brits and everything. But otherwise, no, it's an unnecessary burden on the players, and that will affect the quality of the Premiership next season.
You know something, Lindsay, as well? I was watching I had nothing to do. Funny enough, there was so much to do on Saturday because you had here the Durban July that I haven't watched for I don't know how many years.
Really?
I didn't even watch it. It used to be such a great event.
Yes.
And you had Wimbledon. I had no interest in Wimbledon at all for whatever reason. And then we had the rugby. And
what rugby?
I watched.
I didn't.
Well, it was the Springboks against Italy.
Okay.
And I started to watch about 10 minutes and the Springboks had 77 possession. I thought, do I really want to watch this? You know, I had no interest at all. I know it ended off, the Italy came back, but I know they were missing major players. I said, it's just too much. You know, it's just too much and too much rubbish. If you understand, it's too many games, you know. I like to watch the major nations. There should be A and B leagues kind of thing. I don't, you know,
I turned South off Africa yesterday completely, David. I didn't even know the British Grand Prix was on because you get so... There's so much. There's the Women's World Cup, which is all over the BBC and everywhere else, which I haven't watched. England are rubbish, so I'm not interested. What else is there? There was, of course, Wimbledon, which is getting blanket coverage in Europe. But the British Grand Prix slipped away. So I just watched Netflix. I'm watching a series called Departure and another one called Marcella. Both quite good. Marcella better than Departure. But, yeah, otherwise, I'm trying to switch off from the real world and just go into fantasy land.
Yeah, that's the right way. But I must admit that there's just been, there's so much mediocre sport. There's so much mediocrity around that just doesn't excite me.
It's not a treat anymore to watch sport when there's so much. Do you see what I mean?
No, that's exactly it. Yeah, you know. Anyway.
Okay, well, we'll find a treat somehow, David. Thank you very much. You're always a treat. David Shapiro is from Shapiro World, and he's with Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.